On today's Compassion Radio.
God told me, Daniel, you will not Google any of these diseases. Wow. You will not look up the treatments. Your job is to sit next to your wife and love her. And I felt so helpless, but I knew also that's what God said, and it was good.
Good day, friends. Thanks so much for joining us today on Compassion Radio. We tell a God story in some of the most difficult places on earth. Sometimes those difficult places are a lot closer to home than we ever wanted or expected. Yet for those who go through unexpected tragedy or suffering, the potential for experiencing God's love and presence is found to be as close as the next prayer, the next breath. The ongoing COVID epidemic is a forceful reminder that we are at our best when we don't run away from important questions about life and death, how we support those who face unexpected loss, and how to finish well when the time comes. The difference between despair and hope, of course, is God's promises, how He keeps them, and how we cling to them. Today's guest has an extraordinary story to tell, and not because the details are all that unique, but because he and his wife did an amazing job preparing themselves and their children to face the inconceivable. They certainly didn't do it in their own strength, that's for sure. But when you're counting on someone much stronger and more trustworthy than you, you really can be part of miracles. Sandy and I sat down with Daniel Blett of Transworld Radio at his home in Bratislava, Slovakia, for this interview, which you'll hear in a three-part series that begins today.
To say this past year has been a trying time for you would be a gross understatement, and we'll get to the details here shortly. But first of all, could you just tell me what you're doing here in Slovakia?
I work in program distribution for TWR.
And TWR is Transworld Radio.
Transworld Radio, overseeing the program distribution for Central Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa.
And it's a radio ministry that actually operates an entire network of towers across the world. And programming brings the right kind of mix of programming to different language groups across the planet. And what's the prime objective of TWR in doing this?
Probably the core DNA of TWR was to take the gospel places where it's very difficult to go.
With your own feet.
Yeah. Well, it started using a radio signal to take the gospel into Spain under the time of Franco, when you're not allowed to.
So during the 30s through the 70s, when Franco was ruling as a totalitarian dictator in Spain, we didn't think much about that in the West, even though it was a Western country. It was living under this prolonged state of totalitarianism. We think more about the Eastern European states as being under that kind of rule. But you, as an organization, took that mission seriously to get the gospel in. That really helped to nurture the believers that were there and to raise up new ones. How many countries is TWR operating in now?
It's hard to know countries, but we broadcast in well over 230 languages.
So you take the Great Commission seriously?
Well, that's kind of where we're told to start.
Yeah.
It's not like the great suggestion. And having been one whose parents went and growing up as a missionary kid, it's very unusual that I almost never see the people to whom I'm ministering. I don't know any of the 90 languages I work at. Well, I probably know two or three of them. So for me, it's a very different mission setting. But again, the message can go whether or not I can go.
We feel the same way with Compassion Radio because we have a point of presence around 500 places in the United States. Most of the communication we have with friends out there is through their specific project giving and letting us know why they're giving to what we have presented to them. And sometimes we get that rare opportunity to meet them face-to-face, and it's a real joy when we do. And this, for me, Daniel, is an opportunity for me to actually touch base with something that God's been doing for a very long time here, and I was not expected to be invited into this story. But the story we're going to tell today is not just about your work with TWR, although it is how God gave you your family and put you in the places where you are and given the kids you have now. And they're all missional. I can tell every one of your kids is passionate about worship and life. And so is your wife. And Lynn left us to go home to heaven earlier this year. So we're in that year of firsts with you right now. And it was not an expected thing, as I understand.
Not at all.
But if you could, just tell me a little bit about what your ministry was together, what you were called to do, and then we'll move on to the details of how God decided to bring her home.
Both of us had very clear missions calls. Mine is through my parents' example. And God's call to me was to go to mostly people who had not been reached. And as they moved back to the U.S., I didn't see that happening in U.S. radio, so I thought God made a mistake. But I went ahead and studied radio communications anyway and missions. And through my internships, I began working with TWR. For Lynn, it was different. At age 12, she was called to missions through a drama of Adoniram Judson's.
Hmm.
And she was getting called to go to the unreached, even though she was a music person, a piano performer.
She ended up studying at Moody as
yeah.
well.
And a lot of missions there, too. And so for 2 years, she gave up her piano to go work with North Africans in the ghettos of Lyon. Mm. And we met in France. And in spite of our call to reaching the unreached, neither one of us had a call to a specific language or a specific country. And now it's obvious why, because with TWR, we're reaching several of them. It's not just one. And so sometimes what seems unusual from God is exactly the right thing.
And God's math is usually very different than we would expect.
Yes.
We don't just add our ideas together and do something new. God multiplies and creates all kinds of new calculus out of the things that we think we are capable of doing or are willing to do or are passionate about.
Yeah, he asks us to plan, to do the best with what we have, but then it's his job to decide how many thousand he's going to feed with five loaves or, mm-hmm. or two fish.
Right. Yeah.
That's his problem.
And you've been living with those loaves and fishes for years, and you have a beautiful spot here in Bratislava that you are now living in, and you've kind of hopscotched around as God provided you places to live. But you didn't come here just to build your own personal wealth or the American dream in Slovakia. You came here to be kingdom-minded, kingdom-focused, and raise your kids to be that way.
If I was going to choose to live in a fancy, nice place, I wouldn't have moved here because I lived in Monaco beforehand.
Mm.
But God, even before the mission chose to come here, God told me what their choice was going to be, and he told me I was going to be here. So even the hard choices are simple. How to apply them could be hard.
Mm-hmm.
But he told me I was going to be here.
Those kind of answers to prayers come because you're praying them, not because you're not praying them.
Yes.
God doesn't just try to intrude into our thoughts and force an idea upon us. He nudges us in ways that ask us to ask him. So how did you go about asking God what was coming next in your life when you were living a glamorous position, so to speak, in a beautiful spot of the Mediterranean, and you wondered if you had a future with TWR, but you sense that you really needed to ask God a passionate question? What was the question you asked him?
I think everybody, including the organization at the time, was saying, where will we be next? Because the organization hadn't decided.
Yeah.
But it was okay, because at the same time, Lynn had worked in the Chinese community around Chicago as a music director, but realized they were reaching their own people. So she said, God, what would you have for me? Call me to the unreached. And so he called her to live in France among the Muslims. And she had several people say, well, if you go hide yourself among the Muslims in France, you'll never find a husband. And so we met at a music camp where she was teaching piano and I was doing audio production to produce a concert for him.
And how long did you court before you married?
Well, if you count online communication, about a year and a half. Physically together in the same place, under 2 weeks.
Well,
total, over several times.
And off you launch into a grand new mission.
Yes, it's not probably the recommended way to be dating and get together, but it was there, and that's how it happened. And it was so clear for her, too, that this fit exactly what God had called her to do.
And what year did you marry?
We were married in 1998, February 7th. We were told not to do February 14th because everything's expensive every year from then on.
Economy comes into mind there.
So you're telling us that your pretty much entire pre-marriage relationship was
online.
Online.
That's right.
Yeah. But you didn't meet online, so it's not like a dating service that you met online, but you met in God's dating service, basically putting you in unexpected places.
Oh, that was obvious. When I met her, I was very impressed with her reactions. I said, nobody's ever responded to me that way except my sisters. Hmm. But I was interested in somebody else at the time.
Oh.
And I found out she had that because she lived mostly with missionary kids and foreigners in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And she had a list of 12 items that she'd made when she was in youth group. Youth director said, make a list now because otherwise you'll make your list to match the person.
Yeah.
And there were at least two or four of them that were contradictory, but I fit them all.
You were a contradiction right in front of her. Huh?
Well, many people would agree with that. No, but everything matched her list, and she'd never seen anybody come even close.
So when you met her, how did God begin to develop your mutual interest for each other?
The mutual interest started simply because our ministry actually crossed paths.
Mm-hmm.
We aired programs in a Berber dialect in North Africa. And she had the original programs. One of her side jobs was copy them to give them on cassettes to the women in her area who didn't speak French because she was ministering in French to the North Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked about visiting. And then gradually, about 8 months later, I ran through a real difficult time in our organization.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been through almost the same kind of very difficult time. By that time, she'd put me out of her heart thinking I might not be interested. And God said, you need to take a risk. You were helped. Now you need to help. And so that took care of that. Then gradually we started to get a little more and more interested.
That's just living out scripture right there, because Paul tells us, I go through these things so that I can in turn encourage others. Sometimes we go through difficulties and we don't understand why we are experiencing them or what the purpose of it is. And then down the road, we encounter someone God brings into our life. We're able to minister to them in a way that maybe nobody else can. Now, this resulted in a little more depth of relationship than, you know, just a basic friendship. But God began to
partnership there.
Yeah, it's about joining together in ministry and mission. And that's what I see happened with you and Lynn.
I think the thing is, you have to first obey God. Why do you ask for anything else if you don't obey God?
Yeah.
Or at least to the level you know. Mm-hmm. I think he asks us to plan. Again, he gives us things long term. He gave me my gifts. He gave different people their gifts. And you plan to use them, but you have to take the first step. And once you take the first step, then the next ones come.
The light into your feet and the lamp into the path. Mm-hmm. That's not a long distance searchlight, but God does say there's enough around you to see where you are and give you the ability to step rightly and not slip. And you didn't slip. You stayed on course, apparently, and began this family. How long before the two of you were blessed with kids?
Lynn found out 1 year after we were married that she was expecting. That was her prayer request, because she came and joined me in Bratislava. I'd been here. She came and joined me 2 months after we were married. And she wanted 1 year of Slovak. She didn't have the courage to be tested until she finished the last day of her Slovak course. Not that that was going to change the result.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you do that testing, though, it enables you to converse somewhat in most realms, or going to schools or to shops or to business. Mm-hmm. You could be able to converse and be able to have a job.
Is that part of getting residency?
No, here it wasn't required for residency.
But you wanted to do it right.
Well, if you live somewhere, if you don't speak the language, you're going to be miserable the whole time. Why not do something about it? It also shows the minimum of respect to the people where you're living.
The thing that keeps jumping out to me about Daniel's story is his steadfast confidence in God's goodness and faithfulness. Daniel is rock solid in this year of grief because he knows God is. We'll be back to the interview in just a moment. Whether getting Bibles into closed countries, relief supplies into dangerous refugee camps, or providing training and theology books to barefoot pastors as they begin their ministry, these are all the kind of things we love to share with you every day. And more importantly, they're the kind of things we like to do. You know, for over 78 years now, Compassion Radio listeners and supporters like you have absolutely been up to the task. Will you help us get ready for the next big faith challenges and opportunities of this year? Your gift today will provide the means for us to begin some new initiatives with our Bible and relief partners that reach farther than we've ever gone before. It begins with you and your brave investment in kingdom communication and kingdom action. Every time we go to the front lines of faith, it inspires your faith and your giving to the Great Commission as much as it does ours. It's our strong desire to be going deeper, to go farther, to be braver than we've ever been, and to bring you the stories that you just won't hear anywhere else. I simply ask that you would keep giving so that we can give back to the world through our strategic ministry partners and to you, with inspiring programming on this radio station and over the internet. Here's how. The first and best way to reach us is through our website, CompassionRadio.com. It's available 24/7. Our safe and secure order form there will get your gift to the places needed most, and we'll do it right away. You can also support us with a call during Pacific Time business hours at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. You can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to give right through your phone, no matter where you are. Of course, you can also put a stamp on an envelope and mail your gift to our Compassion Radio office, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Again, that's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. However you give, we'd love to hear more about why you believe in Compassion Radio. We so much value your messages and letters. And know this, your gift is deeply appreciated. Thank you for loving us in this way.
If you live somewhere, if you don't speak the language, you're going to be miserable the whole time. Why not do something about it? It also shows the minimum of respect to the people where you're living.
And you are doing things in ministry with your church community that are not just about TWR, although many of them are around you. Mm-hmm. So what kind of ministry did you do over those years?
Ministry in our church, the first one, I was just really, really glad for fellowship. Because, like when you start a business, your first year is crazy. We were starting up here, it was crazy. It was a very difficult time spiritually as well. I'd experienced direct personal spiritual attacks like I'd never lived through in my life. And I was just glad to be with God's people. Mm-hmm. The next step was, and probably the easiest, if you're still weak in the language, you could join in with the choir or worship teams, and actually singing helps you learn to pronounce words correctly and how they work and listen correctly. And Lynn came as a piano performance major, so her stylings and other instruments she played fit very naturally in our church. And our church has a more of a classical music background. A lot of people classical musically trained, and so it fit very well for her.
So that was your anchor in your church congregation. But what else was she doing while you were busy with TWR work and helping keep the systems running around the world? What was she doing to reach out to people here?
Reaching out to people here for her is probably just normal who she is and the people she would meet, as well as we had children with other children. But when Samuel, our son, was born about 17 and a half years ago, before that, for a year and a half, she'd had excruciating pain. And we finally were in the U.S. on furlough when he was about 5-6 months old and found out through an accidental MRI that she had a tumor growing in her spine and it was pressing out on the nerves. That's why she'd had excruciating pain. So after that, after it was removed, she was paralyzed from the waist down. And over therapy and hard work, she was able to walk and live mostly a normal life. But she was limited by energy and strength anyway early on. So what would be a half-time job for most people would be a full-time job. So being a mother was a very full-time job, just to have the energy to do those things.
And it wasn't the end of your brood of kids either.
Dara came, and it was a big test because she was scared, what if the pain comes back?
Right.
But it was the easiest pregnancy, and God blessed very much by teaching the whole walk of faith through the pregnancy, and also by Dara's character, was the person and character God put into her life at that time to build her up.
She's such a sweet spirit.
So your wife survived 3 pregnancies and has had some major neurological issues and surgeries. So there was already trauma on her body and it was taxing. But there were other things that were going on that you weren't aware of at the time. What happened a few years down the road?
A year and a half ago, we were on furlough in the U.S. and she'd had some nerve things in one arm, some kind of thromboses, and they dealt with that. So it's safe to fly back. And she said, you know, there seems something's going on, but let's go home and deal with it. And some other furloughs had been difficult to say, should I go home? It was a stress this time. It was very clear she wanted to go home.
And when you say go home, you meant come
to
back
Slovakia.
To Bratislava.
And that she loved it here. That's where we have her marriage and family. But sometimes she really struggled more with that. This time it was very clear she wanted to go home. And we found out a couple days before coming to Bratislava, we now know it was probably a TIA, but we didn't know. It was very, very tired, very hot, busy.
And a TIA is a transient ischemic attack, which means a mini stroke of some kind, but you're not sure where it's coming from or where it actually ended up in your brain.
But within a year ago, August, within 3 or 4 days of our arriving, she called me. She'd been working in the yard and said, Daniel, come home. I need to go to the emergency room. She was sure it was a stroke. And so couldn't feel one side of the face, couldn't speak clearly, very lightheaded with a headache. So we went, and the short story is they did find out it was a stroke, and it was not the first one. They kept her in the hospital, and that was the start of a much longer saga.
At about what ages are we talking about here?
50.
Well, to begin there, you started noticing some severe consequences. During the process of trying to figure out what was going on, you went through a number of doctors, a number of specialties. Everyone kept thinking, it's got to be something else. It's got to be the heart. It's got to be nerves. It's got to be something causing clots. What did they finally deduce?
Well, first of all, the reality is nobody knew what it was. They did all the testing correctly, even by our American insurance standards. Mm-hmm. We were able to get an international transfer to one of the top hospitals in Vienna. And based on some good advice from a good friend, said just have her checked head to toe. And the second day they found out she had stage 4 bladder cancer.
Stage 4, we understand what that means in America. And bladder cancer, people say, you can get cancer in your bladder?
What they did tell us is that the oncologist there is some experience working with this, and he said that can actually cause all the blood chemistry problems she was having from on both extremes at the same time. And so they immediately had to operate and take out a tumor, then tried with chemotherapy to work on the rest. But she was still having strokes this whole time, strokes every 2 or 3 days.
Oh my.
Sometimes I'd be sitting in front of her and seeing she's reacting a bit strange, and I thought maybe she'd taken her sleeping medicine, found it later. Right then she was having a stroke.
Oh, Daniel. That must have been difficult to watch.
It was. I think still the most difficult by far was that nobody knew. Mm-hmm. And you're helpless to help.
Yeah.
What God had done in our lives is the previous year as our family, we'd cut the devotional experiencing God up into small enough slices to do it as a family. Mm. And to know what is God saying to you. I'm a research and studying person, organizing. And God told me, Daniel, you will not Google any of these diseases.
Wow.
You will not look up the treatments. Your job is to sit next to your wife and love her.
Mm.
And I felt so helpless, but I knew also that's what God said. And it was good,
mm-hmm.
even though it was totally the wrong thing for who I am.
Counterintuitive for you.
And it was totally against the gifting and everything, but God said it so clearly, I told my kids, we're not going to do this. And they had no problem because they knew God said it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it means you have a whole different level of trust for the people around you, whether you want to or not, because God said to.
So tell us a little bit how you walked through this with your children.
When they were in Bratislava, when Lynn was still here, they would come to the hospital almost every day until school began, and before or after school or before or after sports as they could. And it took about 2 weeks before we knew that it might be something that would take a little longer. So we had to deal with two things. We had to deal with how to live.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had to deal with how do we deal with the medical situation. And we had to address both of those.
Mm-hmm.
For how to live, I just sat down and said, even if she'd come home, it's going to be a while to recover. How can we make the household work for us in a way that doesn't kill any of us, in a way that we can be friends? Because if we are not friends and work together, we've missed the whole point.
And that's saying a lot when you have teenagers in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking them to step into a kind of spiritual depth and maturity. Not so much seriousness, but just understanding the gravitas of the situation, that this is a spiritual and eternal question you're dealing with. How are we as a family going to bless those that God has given us in this unit? And how are we going to live so that we remember that we live during these times rather than just awaiting the worst?
To be honest, I'm thankful to our organization for a lot of the leadership training they've given, because this is not any of my strength. And I could, how do we do? We share openly as much information as we can. Now, the youngest one is 12 years old, and she couldn't handle everything, but she knew enough that if there was another stroke, that could be it, any day. And that was enough, maybe more than enough, but that was enough. And for the others who were at the time 17 and 19, basically I just told everything from the doctors. And I remember one night we went to the garage, so wouldn't bother the youngest daughter. And I told them, here's what's happening. We have no idea. She'd already gone to Vienna. And my son looked at me and he said, Dad, my worst nightmare is leaving all my friends, leaving my school, leaving my soccer club. But if she has to go to America to get her better, we go tomorrow. So once they made that decision, then we could work together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I couldn't do that for them, and I probably couldn't have done it as well as they did.
My thanks today to Daniel Paulette of Trans World Radio for this moving portrayal of a faithful marriage put to the test and found to be pure gold. We'll hear more of this powerful story on tomorrow's broadcast, so don't miss it.
So much more in store. It's fine.
When you pray about where to invest in the kingdom of God around the world, thank you for including us. We can't do this work without you, and we can't introduce you to the inspiring stories of the kingdom if you don't send us. Simply go to our website, CompassionRadio.com. Our toll-free number is manned during business hours Pacific time at 1-800-868-2478. If you get voicemail, just leave a full message and we will call you back as soon as the office is open. You can also write us and send your gift by mail to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. I'm Bram Floria. Join us for the next Compassion Radio or online at CompassionRadio.com. God bless you, friends.